Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on, and I'm joined live by Stuart Rhodes and Ivan Raiklin. They're there in Washington, D.C., having just attended the hearing for the accused pipe bomber, January 6th pipe bomber. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Good to go, brother. How are you doing?
Very good. So tell us, what is the latest?
Yeah, so basically what just occurred, we just finished up listening in the front row behind a few witnesses before the Judiciary Committee, subcommittee on January 6th select subcommittee, if you will. And the chairman, right outside of the chairman's office, Congressman Barry Loudermilk, who is from Georgia. It's oddly enough, Congressman Loudermilk actually represented Roseanne Boylan, one of the two that was murdered on that day. She was actually murdered by D.C. Metropolitan Police Department officer Lila Morris. Not a single mention during that hearing of that. There was a few mentions of Ashley Babbitt murdered by U.S. that they didn't even mention the U.S. Capitol Police officer Michael Byrd. Bottom line here, though, Harrison, is that this was a sham hearing. I think we both agree to it. And effectively, they were trying to push the narrative, the DOJ, that Brian Cole Jr. is effectively, although it's alleged, they're trying to frame the national narrative to believe that he is the actual pipe bomber. And we don't buy one bit of it, primarily because the lead prosecutor, Jocelyn Valentine, is the same prosecutor that went after General Flynn and that went after the Proud Boys in order to cover for the deep state over the last, at this point, we're going on 9 years.
Yeah, and she's the one that suborned perjury. She's been caught red-handed pressuring a Proud Boy who later admitted that he was being pressured into a false confession. He's since come clean and said that the only reason he did it is he was facing, you know, 30 years of life in prison. So that was, what was his name?
Jeremy Bertino,
right.
This is the face of the individual that we're referring to. She's the Deputy Chief of National Security at the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jocelyn Valentine. Again, prosecutor versus General Flynn, Proud Boys, and now Brian Cole Jr. We don't buy one bit of it. I mean, he's innocent until proven guilty, and so far the evidence clearly shows there's not even close to enough evidence for anyone even to consider him as a pipe bomber.
It was a bit of a bittersweet experience because actually it's like deja vu all over again. I know what it's like as a persecuted J6 political prisoner to have a show trial going on in Congress to set the narrative while you're waiting for trial in pretrial detention and solitary confinement. That's being done to Mr. Cole right now. I do want to give props to Clay Higgins on the committee. He was the most hardcore when it came to pointing out the reality that J6 was a Fed direction and a setup. But even he apparently is buying the sell that Cole is the actual pipe bomber. And it seems like his questions to some of the witnesses there, it seems like he was buying into the idea that because he's black, they didn't want to use him. They didn't want to make a big deal out of him being the pipe bomber. Only now, you know, now the Trump administration's in under Cash Patel, are they actually going after him? I think that's false. I think he's being misled. So I'm hoping that we can help set the record straight. I think the biggest tells are on J6. You had two Secret Service agents sitting there in their cars finishing their lunch after they were told by a counterintelligence officer in the U.S. Capitol Police that there's a bomb next to them, like right there. They just sat there for two more minutes and finished their lunch. And so did a U.S. Capitol Police officer, too. It was D.C. Metro. So they sat there and finished their lunch and didn't move while after being told there was a bomb next to them. They didn't cordon off the area. And when Loudermilk, the committee chairman, was asking questions about that, basically the answer was, well, it could have just been, you know, adrenaline of the day or incompetency and bad training. So wait a minute. So the Secret Service has bad training? DC Metro has bad training. They don't understand how to react to a potential pipe bomb.
Do you need to be trained to know go away from bomb?
Well, like, right, exactly. So first thing you do is you get off the X. You get away from the out of the blast radius of a pipe bomb. And next thing you do is you cordon off the area so no one else goes through there. Instead, there were civilian women and kids walking by. There was train traffic and vehicle traffic. As Steve Baker has pointed out in his excellent piece on this at Blaze Media. And the other thing he pointed out is that those two, one of the agent that went over to the Secret Service and warned them was one of two agents who were walking around after they got a bomb scare.
The whole thing is suspicious. Stay there, guys. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
We're going Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements. Sometimes we have BOGO Sups. We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. It is a 40% off mega sale happening right now. Everything on thealexjonesstore.com is 40% off. No discount needed. Sale ends tonight, January 14th at midnight. You also only have 3 days left to enter to win our Ford Raptor plus $10,000 cash giveaway. Every order placed today gets you 50 times entries on the Raptor plus our brand new giveaway, a Ford 250 diesel plus $10,000 in cash. The sale ends tonight at midnight. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison now to take advantage of 40% off store-wide massive sale, and you get entered to win both of these very awesome trucks for the next 3 days, but the sale ends tonight at midnight. With that, I'm happy to once again go to Ivan Raiklin and Stuart Rhodes. Of course, our regular viewers know them well. They're there in Washington, D.C., outside of the office of Representative Barry Loudermilk. So, guys, what was the purpose of the committee meeting today? Like, what were they trying to achieve? What were they talking about? Who was there? Because this wasn't a criminal proceeding like we've seen before with the pipe bomber going in to make a plea or anything. What was the purpose of this event today?
Well, if you go by the title of the actual hearing, it's essentially to continue the investigation into the J5, J6 pipe bomber investigation, right? But when you look at the witnesses that were brought forth, three Republican witnesses and then one Democrat witness, no one really had a role in investigating the pipe bomb except for maybe the Democrat witness was called in to he was the deputy section chief of the Capitol siege section that went after all January 6ers. So I guess indirectly you can say that. But it's very telling to know that as you observe and listen, and Jamie Ratskin was there on that committee, subcommittee was waved in, I think. And he is even promoting the narrative that Brian Cole Jr. is the pipe bomber.
Yeah.
So that immediately was the first immediate tell for me that this is a total deep state cover up. Yeah. If Jamie Raskin is in agreement with some of the Republicans on that committee,
yep.
It's just straightly in your face. They didn't mention Jocelyn Valentine. And actually today, for the second day in a row, I've gotten a hit piece from the deep state on me for confronting in a very peaceful, cordial, professional manner, the assistant U.S. attorney on this case, as I asked her a few questions in a very calm, professional, low-key demeanor, and she did not want to address any of the questions of I basically asked, why do you think America believes this Patsy pipe bomber, considering you had a role in the General Flynn case, the Proud Boys case? You basically compelled false witness by Jeremy Bertino in the Proud Boys case, and so on and so forth. And now the deep state's kind of scrambling to try to discredit me because we're shining the light. And now that Stewart's here,
we played
the entire
that video.
Media complex was just focused in on him today.
Right. I even think about it. Is this your first time back to the Capitol, Stewart? Or you've been back there a few times?
No, it's my first time back. When I first got out, when I came into the Capitol and advocated for release of Jeremy Brown, whether
it's right.
6 years, who's still being held in prison. And then Judge Mehta tried to ban me from the Capitol. It's my first time back since then. So, but I want to emphasize something. As Ivan was saying, the entire focus is on Brian Cole. And like Loudermilk asked the witnesses, well, basically the sell was, it's just incompetence. It's incompetence and dereliction of duty by the leadership is why they just sat on this for 5 years. And only when you got competent leaders under Kash Patel and Bongino that you now get a solving of the case. That's complete nonsense. I believe the fix is in. The deep state is making sure that Steve Baker's disclosures, his investigative journalism identifying the actual pipe bomber, is what they are trying to cover up. That's why they magically found this guy just, you know, weeks later. It's because they want to cover up for the deep state Fed's direction. And like Ivan said, it's both parties now. Now, I think some of them have good intent. I believe Clay Higgins is a patriot with good intentions, but he's being misled along with the others who might have good intent to believe this guy is guilty. And I believe he's a patsy. And really, like I said, so Steve Baker's article points out that the two counter-surveillance officers from the Capitol Police made a beeline straight for a bush outside of the Black Caucus headquarters, as their institute for the Congressional Black Caucus, looking under a bush there, didn't find anything. They made a beeline. 2 minutes later, they found the pipe bomb under a bush outside the DNC. So why did they just go to those two bushes only? And that bush, the first one they went to outside of the Black Caucus Institute, that is where the pipe bomber is later seen on video sitting down and going under the bush and doing something and then getting up and walking away. So it's just bizarre. It makes no sense at all. They would know to go to that bush unless they were in on it, unless it was a setup. Brian Cole can't get the intelligence operatives in the Capitol Police to go do things like that. Only they can do that. Only someone on the inside can do that. Brian Cole can't tell two Secret Service agents, don't worry about it. Just sit back and finish your lunch. It's okay. Only being told it's an exercise is how that would happen. So I think it stinks to high heaven, and that's why I'm here, standing for his right to due process, too. It's a time for all Americans to come together and demand due process for everyone. It doesn't matter what party's in power, doesn't matter what they're accused of. We cannot have people being railroaded, and the excuse is always incompetency. It's not incompetency, it's malice.
Well, and I am having sort of flashbacks to the January 6th fake show trial, because that was a show trial. And people don't understand that this is what show trials look like. I mean, they have all of the appearance of a real trial, but in the case of the January 6th Select Committee, the defense wasn't allowed to put on a defense at all, or the people accused weren't allowed to put on a defense at all.
It's not prime time. It's so weak. I mean, it's so weak.
Why wasn't Steve Baker here as a witness? Why wasn't Kyle Serafin here as a witness, a man who was originally assigned for the surveillance detail that was surveilling the home that was right next to where that Capitol Police officer was living? That's where the EBT card came from, right? So they were surveilling that
Metro card.
That's where the Metro card came from. So they were surveilling two suspected people, persons two and three, that were considered suspects. They happened to be living right next door to where the Capitol Police officer was living also. And so how come he's not here testifying? So key witnesses are missing, and no one's even talking about
from the
anyone,
police.
Any possibility. Yeah, the two counterintelligence officers that found the pipe bomb, surveillance guys, how come they're not testifying? The two Secret Service agents who just sat there and finished their lunch, how come they're not being put on the spot and asked, why did you just finish your lunch after being told that? What did they tell you that made you not get up and leave the area, instead just finish your lunch? So that's what's not happening. We'll see if they fix that in future hearings, but it's not looking good.
I mean, if I was advising this committee and this particular member of Congress, I mean, I basically created this little slideshow on who potentially was involved in the Fed's direction. It's all of the law enforcement, political leadership of the legislative branch that were potentially involved. Because you got to remember that the primacy on authority of law enforcement in the Capitol is the Capitol Police Board. They're appointed by the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader, or the President of the Senate. They want to take that authority. And so from there, you have the Senate and House Sergeants at Arms that direct the U.S. Capitol Police on what they will and will not do. So if you want to run a covert action, if you will, within the Capitol grounds and inside of the Capitol, the authority to do that is the Capitol Police Board at the direction of the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader.
And am I wrong?
More evidence is supporting that.
And using their training division, which guess who is part of the training division? That same Capitol Police officer that is suspected.
Yeah.
Well, and tell me if I'm wrong. Is it true the Capitol Police are one of the only federal agencies that is immune to FOIA requests?
Yes, because they're part of the legislative branch. This is how secretive they are, is that you cannot FOIA it. You cannot get a Brady request from a judicial proceeding. What is his name? Tom Fitton over at Judicial Watch. He was the only lawsuit that tried to do that. And guess what? A Republican speaker and a Democrat speaker, their attorneys blocked that from taking place. On that note, this is key and important. Maybe this is the first time I'm saying this publicly, is Speaker Mike Johnson's former, one of her senior lawyers, her name is Ashley Callum, used to be counsel for oversight and I think judiciary. She actually recently went over to the same firm that Andrew Weissman is working at. And my sources are telling me that she has been playing a role in making sure that Loudermilk doesn't have a separate committee, but instead a subcommittee under judiciary so that they can be they can make sure that his investigative powers only rest with scrutinizing the DOJ and the FBI and never touching the U.S. Capitol Police. So if the allegation that the U.S. Capitol Police officer was the alleged pipe bomber placer, if senior leaders of the U.S. Capitol Police, one murdered Ashley Babbitt, that's Michael Byrd, another lied before in the Oath Keepers trial, David Lazarus, who happened to be the special
agent
of Dignitary Protection Division, was the lead witness. He actually served directly for Nancy Pelosi and was the lead witness against the Oath Keepers, along with Harry Dunn. Okay. And it's been proven through video analysis by Steve Baker, once again, that guy completely perjured himself. Well, the evidence is overwhelming at this point that the U.S. Capitol Police had a role in the Fed's insurrection, the most role, and its subsequent cover-up.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So, I mean, it's bizarre.
And not mentioned in the hearing.
Right.
Not a single mention.
Now, I was mentioned.
The U.S. Capitol Police.
You had more like a radical communist. What's his name? Moskowitz? Was like, oh, I see Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the Proud Boys. And by the way, he wasn't pardoned. He is still a convicted seditionist. This is what I've been saying for a long time. The fact that I wasn't pardoned, or the other Oath Keepers and Proud Boys are still waiting for pardons, we were commuted only, that just helps them further the false narrative that there really was a plot. Otherwise, they would have got a pardon. So he attacked me. But then I was attacked by a Republican. That caught me off guard. Yeah, Troy Nell from Texas, my own state, said, well, it's clear that President Trump wasn't involved in this, but the militias did have a plan. Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, Stuart Rhodes himself said, if Trump won't do it, we will. That's not what I said. Wasn't referring to anything to do with going inside the Capitol. So I'm being attacked by a Republican. And so what I'm concerned about, this is what I suspected for a long time, is there are people inside the Republican circles who want to pin J6 on the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys as though we really did have a plan to attack the Capitol. And that's their strategy, is to blame us and say, oh, President Trump didn't have anything to do with it. They did. As though all the lawfare used against Trump was not also used against us. All the lies, all the spin, all the false narrative, it lives on not just from Democrats, but also from Republicans. It's disgusting.
Congressman Troy Nails, if you're listening in, I'm going to send this clip to you, sir. Enrique Tarrio, the chair of the Proud Boys at the time, never entered the Capitol. He wasn't even in D.C. The leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes right here, never entered the Capitol. The Oath Keepers that were in the Capitol were helping U.S. Capitol Police officers to make sure that there was calm and peaceful First Amendment activity.
And there, right? And there was no evidence presented in my trial of any smoking gun, direction from me, order from me, or a plan for me to my guys to go in the Capitol. At the end, they just said the jury could assume, they could presume there was an implied conspiracy by the fact that the guys went inside, that it was formed on the way up the steps. No plan. That's what they fell back on with a biased jury in D.C. We were found guilty based really on our free speech.
That relied on Harry Dunn
and
David Lazarus's testimony.
All that was to counter the reality that our guys helped Capitol Police inside. Yeah. So Harry Dunn and Lazarus got up there and lied and said, oh, no, they didn't help us. They were hostile when they were not even together that day.
And that was
so it's a completely false narrative.
That was proven false with Steve Baker coming out with the video showing that at the time under oath, he said he was doing one thing. He was actually completely across the Capitol, at least 10 minutes away from the location that he said he was.
Yeah, he was in tunnels under the Senate building at that time. They were not together. So they had to lie because the truth was our guys went inside and helped cops multiple times.
And also, that is outright perjury. I mean, those guys should go to jail, in my opinion. And then you remember Steve Baker was arrested right after that. So another thing, Steve Baker comes out with a big bombshell that makes the Capitol Police look bad. And what do you know? Looks like maybe y'all's feed cut out. I think we may have lost him there. Guys, can you hear me? Oh, shoot. Okay. We'll try to reconnect with them. And I want to hear the rest of that, cause it is very strange. They're even having these hearings after all the alleged pipe bomber hasn't been convicted yet. So, you know, if you get the conviction and then want to look into, you know, why it took so long to get there, but it sounds like they're having this hearing on the assumption that this is the right guy and they got the right guy. But we don't know that yet. That has not been proven in court. And I'm not even sure if the guy is declared guilty or not. I don't even remember if that's happened yet. So very weird to see that they're even having a hearing about this when the legal case hasn't even gone to trial. That is very bizarre, and I think I agree with Stuart Rhodes that it reeks of January 6th, where you have this simultaneous fake public show trial while real trials are going on behind the scenes. But the point of the show trial was to poison the jury pools against for the real trial. Sorry, you guys got cut off there.
That's exactly right. We're listening to you. It's exactly correct. The whole point is to poison the jury pool, to try them in a court of public opinion ahead of time, not talk about any other possibility, any other suspect, not talk about the one that's already been identified at all, and just buy into the false narrative. So I'm going to say this. I think Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, Todd Blanche, and Bongino before he left, and Judge Jeanine are all complicit in the railroading of an innocent man. The Trump administration, it's as though it was still under the Biden administration. The same actors, Jocelyn Ballantyne, lead prosecutor, the deep state hit person for taking people down, is all being used to get after another innocent man to cover for the deep state. It's disgusting to see the Trump administration do this. It's just disgusting.
And Harrison, if I may just add a separate point on this, is that, I mean, if I was recommending the next hearing to actually start to get and unravel the truth, you must actually have the following three witnesses. Stuart Rhodes, because he understands the weaponization from Pelosi to the judiciary, the DOJ, to the courts. He can explain it at the high-level strategic level. Number two, Enrique Tarrio can explain that weaponization as it applied to the Proud Boys and connect that back to Nancy Pelosi and the United States Capitol and the U.S. Capitol Police Board and Capitol Police. And the last person would be Jeremy Brown, because he was actually, they attempted to recruit him in the run-up to January 6th. And if America starts to learn what we, you know, your audience, we know, but for the lemming Republicans of the world, to include Troy Nels and Barry Loudermilk and the rest of these guys, they just don't know. They don't know reality because they were duped by the Fox News of the world, of which was pretty much complicit in the January 6th Fed insurrection and its subsequent cover-up. So next hearing, Stuart Rhodes, Enrique Tarrio, and Jeremy Brown to lay out the entire case of what occurred in the run-up on and after January 6th, which was a rejection of an illegal, illegitimate 2020 election that was fraudulent on many fronts, to include the COVID con. I'm rehashing everything that this audience knows, but it's for the broader public.
And I would add Kyle Cerf and Steve Baker too, just directly on point for this. They should be here talking about all their findings, which directly refute and prove this is nonsense. Steve Baker's exposed the fact that they went straight for those two bushes. How could they possibly know among all the bushes all around that area to go look at those two places where the pipe bomber had been? How would they possibly know that unless they were in on it? No. And why would the Secret Service agents sit there? So the Secret Service agents brought up to testify while they just sat there, and the D.C. Metro officer also, same guys, also just sat there.
And for those lawyers that are out there, well, oh, the FBI has primacy, this and that, I direct you to Title II U.S. Code, Section 1967, Paragraph B1. It lays out the U.S. Capitol Police's concurrent jurisdiction with MPD, and it extends well beyond Capitol grounds. It includes where the DNC pipe bomb was placed. It includes where the RNC pipe bomb was placed. It includes where Clay Higgins exposed the FBI buses over at Union Station. So the Capitol Police, just overwhelming evidence showcasing that the Capitol Police had a very instrumental role in that Fed insurrection.
And one more thing that I just found out just recently. You have a CIA attorneys who served on the J6 Select Committee, who were doing all of the interrogation of the witnesses for the J6 Select Committee. I did not know that until today. I just found that out.
So at the very top of the January 6th committee that Pelosi constituted with Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney, you had at the very top, the staff director, the guy that basically orchestrated all the hearings and witnesses and testimony, was one of the 51 spies who lied with John Brennan, and was the inspector general for John Brennan when he was over at the CIA. So, becomes the staff director and then brings in two CIA attorneys to run the questioning.
To work as staff.
It's kind of odd that Shawnee Kirkhoff allegedly is now over at the CIA post being here for a couple of years at the U.S. Capitol Police.
So the CIA, and I'm not surprised at all, the CIA's fingerprints are all over J6, and yet that's not being discussed by this committee.
Are there any congressmen or congresswomen that are privy to the truth? I mean, we know you've said Loudermilk and Troy Nels are obviously buying the buying the establishment's line.
I think Clay Higgins has good intent. I think he wants to get at it. He was the firebrand up there Him and a lady from Wyoming, kept her name.
Harriet Hageman.
Hageman from Wyoming.
She replaced Liz Cheney, oddly enough.
Good. So they were the most aggressive about going after the fact that it was a Fed insurrection. They were really doing a good job. But they're also still buying this nonsense that, well, it might be because he's black. That's why they didn't want to, you know, go after him, because they didn't fit the narrative of white supremacists that they were trying to sell. So I think they're believing that. I think that's a lie. I think they're being sold a lie, and I hope we can help correct that.
I mean, to answer the question, though, Thomas Massie's probably the one that's first and foremost exposing the pipe bomb and what we think is the reality of the situation.
Like he said about the two Secret Service agents, it must have been a really good lunch for them to sit there.
Right.
So he was there. He popped in and sat for a little while.
Oh, he did?
So we hope that, he did. Yeah.
Massie?
He did, yeah.
I believe
I saw him pop in and sit down for a little bit. So unless I'm mistaken, he was there. So
I saw Jordan pop in. He didn't say anything, but I didn't see Massie.
Right. So there are some legit, I believe Clay Higgins is a sincere patriot. I think Massie obviously is. And I think there's a lady from Wyoming, Hageman. So I think there's people that want to get at the truth, but I think they're being told to build the goods. And, you know, here's the problem. That's the problem with bipartisan politics, right? They want to believe that their party is now doing the right thing when they're in charge. And it's just not true. But in fact, Loudermilk, when he was talking about the FBI agents in the crowd, he said, oh, so there were some FBI agents used for crowd control that day. He's repeating the nonsense that Kash Patel put out there to cover for the fact that 274 undercover FBI agents were disclosed to have been in the crowd. Loudermilk's drinking the Kool-Aid from Kash Patel. Oh, they were there doing crowd control. And so he was asking witnesses, you know, so they were there being used for crowd control, stating that as a fact, then asking, so, you know, would you call someone like that as a witness? And then the former prosecutor guy is like, well, maybe not. They were just there for crowd control. So it's really weird and sick to watch the cell that Patel put out to cover that massive disclosure just being brushed under the rug. Oh, it must be for crowd control. We're okay.
So we only about a minute left.
The person that owns the Kool-Aid stand that's distributing the Kool-Aid is Jocelyn Ballantyne, and she sends it over to Judge Jeanine Pirro. Jeanine Pirro sends it over to the Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, who's now, like, you know,
right.
he quit, and then up the chain to Pam Bondi. And then they had that press conference as they're pounding their chest. We found the pipe bomber. Meanwhile, they were sold a bag of Kool-Aid from Jocelyn Ballantyne.
Right.
I mean, but I can trust that.
But I bring up what Patel did when it came to the disclosure of 274 undercover FBI agents. That didn't come from Patel's office. It came from Congress. But when it was disclosed, he spun it immediately. Oh, they were improperly used as crowd control that day. Not that President Trump first saw it. He's like, there's no way they were there for a legitimate purpose of law enforcement. And President Trump was correct. But Kash Patel, being the water carrier he is, a little deep state bitch that he is, jumped right in and protected it. And now Loudermilk is just accepting that hook, line, and sinker. That, oh, yeah, they were just there for crowd control. Let's just forget about that. Why aren't they talking about that? Why don't we bring some of those agents and put them on the stand and say, what were you doing on January the 6th? Were you doing crowd control? We don't see any evidence of that. See, Baker said, I watched all the video. I see zero evidence.
Absolutely. All right. Final thoughts from Ivan. We have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, real quick, is that in order to get to the truth of January 6th, you must bring in the U.S. Capitol Police General Counsel, Thomas Aquinas Tobias, that has all the communications records and decisions on persecuting and prosecuting everybody as he sent that evidence over. The manipulated CCTV footage and sworn testimony of Lazarus Dunn, et cetera, over to the DOJ. That's it. Tad Tobias. We got to go after him.
And you got to bring in the hardcore witnesses, Kyle Serafins, the Steve Bakers. You got to bring in the people that were actually there. You know, like the two counterintelligence agents or counter-surveillance agents that found the pipe bomb, bring them in and ask them, why'd you go to that bush?
Yep. This is such an opportunity, and if the Republicans blow this, it is not good for them. Ivan Raiklin, right. Stuart Rhodes, thank you so much.
God bless you, Lord.
G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine!
No way, you evil scum. Methylene blue is for everyone.
Order Methylene Blue at the alexjonesstore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now! at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer, it just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings. Truth is out there, and they don't want you to know it. There's still people that don't want to believe me out there. How are you going to tell me that Frog isn't totally gay?
Well, damn, I guess Alex was right. That frog was super gay.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Let's get back into what's going on with Iran, as it does seem like we are very much on the cusp of action there. And we showed you that a lot of military personnel are being shifted around the Middle East right now. Basically, a lot of things are aligning very similar actions to what happened in June when we bombed Iran the first time, including Benjamin Netanyahu's plane leaving Israel and going to Cyprus in Greece, exactly the same thing that he did the last time Iran was bombed. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is a little bit of tactical strategic reality about the difficulty of the challenge that they're facing now. Let's watch.
Iran's borders remain the same as they were 500 years ago. All the world's superpowers, the Romans, Arabs, Mongols, Turks, Russians, British, and the United States, have tried to conquer it but failed. Even today, if the United States talks about conquering Iran, it's nearly impossible. I'll explain why. First, Iran's size is larger than you might imagine. Nearly 7 countries, like the UK, could easily fit within it. To its west lies the Zagros Mountains, and it boasts a coastline marked by extremely rocky and unforgettable mountains. You'll also find extremely high mountains along the borders with Pakistan and Afghanistan. To the north, the Albert Mountains form a natural shield. Even if someone crosses these, they'll encounter two large mountains within Iran, where death, not victory, is the norm. Iran possesses so much oil that even if cut off from the world, it could meet its energy needs for the next 200 years. Iran possesses a massive arsenal of missiles capable of burning entire regions to ashes. Therefore, conquering Iran by land is beyond anyone's reach. That's why the fire has now been lit from within Iran. Because when its own people rise up against their own country, no one can stop them from becoming slaves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, that is obviously the strategy that's being pursued at this point. You've got people like Mike Pompeo coming out and saying the Iranian regime is in trouble. Bringing in mercenaries is the last best hope. Riots in dozens of cities in the Basaj under siege. Mashed Tehran, Zenadan, next stop, Balochistan. 47 years of fighting this regime. POTUS 47, coincidence. Happy New Year to every Iranian in the street. Also to every Mossad agent walking beside them. Yes, it's a fabricated, foreign, infiltrated color revolution, exactly like we saw under Ukraine, and for very similar reasons. Trump set to strike Iran in the next 24 hours as Brit embassy closes, but Ayatollah makes last-minute stop to executions. They say at least 3,428 have been killed in the regime's crackdown on protesters. Some people are saying numbers up to $20,000 dead, rather. I don't buy it, personally. So, we'll see. The physical reality on the ground is really the thing that is dictating our actions at this point. You know, a lot of people were pointing out that there was sort of a dearth of U.S. Navy ships in the area, and that being a counter signal to, you know, war with Iran, since we'd want to have our ships there. It also might be the opposite, right? We also might not want our ships in the region because we know that we can't stop their ballistic missile barrages, and we don't want to see an aircraft carrier go down. So that could sort of be both. But Iran, like we saw it in June, they have the ability to overwhelm the Iron Dome. They have the ability to strike sites inside Israel and overwhelm any defenses that they can put up. And Israel is not a big place, and it has most of its really, you know, primary infrastructure in a very small area, sort of this triangle towards the north. They could be utterly destroyed by Iran's ballistic missiles. Our missions there, our bases, could be utterly overwhelmed by Iranian missiles. The infiltration has been moderately successful, but seems like the Iranian regime responded forcefully, stopped the communication that was happening, the organization and coordination that was happening. And so, and there, then there was a big, you know, counter protest. And, you know, these things can be distorted by our perception, right? We're seeing everything through the lens of the mainstream media. But like, was Trump close to being ousted from office through all of 2020? I mean, if you were, you know, an Iranian and you were watching news about America in 2020, you might have believed that, oh, the regime is on the cusp of falling and they just need a little bit of help and it'll all come down. I don't think we were nowhere close to anything like that happening in 2020. So, I mean, that you got to understand, even if you do have these massive protests, even if the protests are violent, they're burning down government buildings. Same thing happened to America 5 years ago. We didn't fall. We didn't collapse. That's not a symbol of an inevitable collapse of a society or a power structure. But that's the way it's being played up and being presented, because it's being used as the casus belli, as the excuse for war. We have to go support these protesters that are so close to achieving victory. Well, that argument doesn't make sense if the protests aren't gigantic and aren't natural and created from outside and aren't anywhere close to succeeding. So they're going to push that story no matter what. It's not true, though. We go to some more videos about this. Since I have a lot. Let's go to clip number 3 here, because let's see, Iran Live. Donald Trump deploys 3 missile-armed destroyers as strike is imminent. Donald Trump had to threaten to hit Iran hard. Yeah, I should say that there are naval forces approaching Iran right now. I believe we have at least one aircraft carrier, I think, just entered into the Red Sea this morning. So they are moving around a little bit. But just in June, when we attacked Iran, we had a lot of naval forces on both sides of the equation, like on the Mediterranean and the Red Sea side. But not this time, although there are people, there are forces moving in that direction. I still don't think Trump wants to get boots on the ground, but that is what's necessary if we're actually going to go after Iran. Maybe he thinks that we will have like a Venezuela 2.0, like that it'll go in and capture the Ayatollah and then, you know, put somebody else in charge. But I really don't see that as happening. So, you know, they've got the ability to respond powerfully with all of their missiles. They've got the land that makes it almost impossible to invade without an absolutely massive force. I mean, there's, I don't know what the plan, I don't know what Israel is planning exactly, or what America is planning exactly. What is the game plan here? Because as far as I can tell, until you take out the ballistic missile batteries, it's not a smart thing to launch an attack on Iran. So we'll see how it goes. But the entire thing that this is predicated on is obviously fraudulent, is obviously a manufactured reality out of the CIA. Let's go to this is John Kirikou on clip number 3, explaining who they want to try to place on the throne of Iran, Reza Pahlavi. Let's watch.
Let's break it down. So Reza Pahlavi is the son of the Shah of Iran, who was thrown out of Iran in early 1979, February of 1979, came into exile briefly in the United States. That led to the Iran hostage crisis. Then we forced him out to the Bahamas and then to Panama and then to Egypt, and he died in Egypt. Reza Pahlavi is the son. He was a young guy when this happened. He was, a teenager. Well, now he's in his 60s. And he's never been to Iran since the 1970s. He's also something of a playboy in the Washington area. He's not a player in Iranian exile circles, but he seems to have a whole lot of money. Well, over the last couple of weeks, several things have happened. Number one, the Israeli government spilled the beans and they admitted that they have been financing him. So is he a Mossad asset? You bet he's a Mossad asset. Mossad is saying it. Number two, he doesn't know anything about contemporary Iran. Patrick Bet-David, the big podcaster, invited Reza Pahlavi to go on his podcast a week ago. And Reza never called him back, never even attempted to, you know, get his name out there, get his picture out there, talk about his view of a future Iran. He's not interested. Donald Trump has been pressured by people on the neoconservative right to welcome Reza Pahlavi into the Oval Office. He would be the person that the United States would announce is going to be, you know, the guy that we're interested in. And Trump said no, he's not interested. I'm going to give you my own admittedly biased view. My own view is Reza Pahlavi is a joke. He's a caricature, a cartoon character. He lives in a mansion all by himself in Potomac, Maryland. Nobody pays any attention to him except these really rich Iranian exiles, most of whom are in Beverly Hills. The only people who really, really want him to be the leader of Iran are the Israelis. I'll add one other thing. As I said, the guy is a non-entity in Washington. He's a non-entity even in Iranian exile politics. But the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos and is the mouthpiece of the 1% of the 1%, ran an op-ed last week that Reza Pahlavi wrote. And he said that he wanted to go back to Iran to usher in a period of democracy. Like, what do you know about democracy? Your father was a fascist dictator who slaughtered his own people and who stole billions upon billions of dollars from the nation's treasury. So you think it should be you who goes back to Iran after 50 years and brings in a period of democracy? Come on, I'm insulted by that. So yeah, this guy's not going to be, I made a comment today kind of offhandedly, and the more I think about it, the more I believe it to be true. He wouldn't survive the walk from the plane to the terminal if he were to fly back to Iran. So he's not going to be the next leader of Iran. And yes, this is the CIA Mossad playbook for regime change. Yes, resist it.
Yeah, 100%. And again, can we not just leave these people alone? I mean, my God, it goes all the way back to, you know, British Petroleum in the early 1900s. It's just been a relentless cycle of regime change, overthrow, revolution, regime change, overthrow, revolution. And why are we, you know, so at odds with them? Israel. I mean, that really is the only reason. Because, I mean, remember, they don't care. They don't actually care. You think they care about Iranian repression? But we're best friends with Saudi Arabia? Okay, what? Like, this is stupid. This is stupid. We currently pay the Taliban $50 million a week. What are you talking about? Where this is our, where it's our humanitarian mission. We have to rescue the Iranians. Okay, so they just killed 500,000 Gazans over the last 2 years in a relentless campaign of genocide. We don't care about them, obviously, but now it's a humanitarian obligation because we care so much about the Iran. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's obviously just a land grab for Israel, and we keep getting pulled into it. And they want to make it illegal for us to talk about it. They want to make it illegal for us to point out that this is the case. Remember, it all goes back to the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. That essentially says that anything, any criticisms of the Israeli state is therefore anti-Semitic and has to be banned. So they want to be able to do this without even asking us first. Israel and Syria, under U.S. oversight, agreed on coordination mechanism to manage intelligence, military, diplomatic, and trade matters. This is from January 6th. The joint statement emphasized preventing disputes and pursuing long-lasting security and stability for both countries. This is a joint statement on the trilateral meeting between the governments of the United States of America, the State of Israel, and the Syrian Arab Republic. The text of the following statement was released by the governments of the U.S., Israel, and Syria. Under the auspices of the United States, senior Israeli and Syrian officials met in Paris. Donald Trump's leadership in the Middle East enabled productive discussions centered on respect for Syria's sovereignty and stability, Israel's security, and the prosperity for both countries. The State of Israel and the Syrian Arab Republic have reached the following understandings. The sides reaffirmed their commitment to strive towards achieving lasting security and stability arrangements for both countries. Both sides have decided to establish a joint fusion mechanism, a dedicated communication cell to facilitate immediate and ongoing coordination on their intelligence sharing, military de-escalation, diplomatic engagement, and commercial opportunities. Under the supervision of the United States. The mechanism will serve as a platform to address any disputes promptly and work to prevent misunderstandings. The United States commends these positive steps and remains committed to supporting the implementation of these understandings as part of a broader effort to achieve enduring peace in the Middle East. When sovereign nations cooperate in a respectful and productive way, prosperity will be unleashed. And, you know, sure, they're currently carrying out pogroms against the Christians there. And yes, they are systematically killing the Druze. I mean, we just heard from Netanyahu yesterday about the brutality of the Syrian regime as they literally cut out a man's heart while still eating it like the barbarians that they are, but obviously more preferable to Bashar al-Assad, who, despite being a moderate and a secularist and protecting the Alawite and Christian and Druze communities in Syria, didn't like Israel, so he had to go. Okay, so now we have the barbarians, the psychopaths, the murderous regime killing all of the minority groups in Syria, but that's preferable. Why? Because he's an Israeli puppet. Jelani loves Israel, and that's the only thing that matters. Okay? It's the only thing that matters. All right? If Iran loved Israel, you think they'd care about 20,000 people being killed? They'd be helping them. They'd be spraying white phosphorus on their neighborhoods to help them understand. They don't care. It's just about submission to the New World Order, submission to the global super state that will be headquartered in Israel, and that destruction of Iran is a key component, the next big step, like that's the next checkpoint. They can't get past that. All the plans fall to nothing. All of the schemes of world domination, having a headquarters in Israel to manage your global empire, all that comes to nothing if you've got a very well-armed and hateful neighbor right there. It doesn't work. So you got to take him out first, take Iran out first, and it doesn't matter if it falls into chaos and it all devolves into mass murder on the streets and Iraq 2.0, Syria 2.0, it's not only doesn't matter, it's kind of like what they want. It actually will keep them occupied. I mean, it's hard to, you know, resist Israel when you're fighting, you know, inter-clan battles over neighborhoods in Tehran. So it's actually much preferable. Ideally, they'll have every single ethnic group in Iran heavily armed and at odds with their neighbors, sort of exactly what we're seeing in Syria now. But of course, it's really hard to understand the Middle East or anything that America does for that matter if you aren't paying attention to Lebanon. Lebanon is like the least mentioned country in the Middle East, except for maybe Jordan. But it is the key to why a lot of things are going on. If you don't recognize that and can't see that, then you're probably scratching your head. Now, obviously, there's a lot of talk about Hezbollah, but it's a misunderstanding about what Hezbollah is and what their goals are and what they've been doing for the last couple decades. So it's very misinterpreted in America anyway, but you want to ask why Venezuela suddenly became a big target for America. I think it probably on top of the priority list is the fact that Hezbollah had a drone construction base there for Iranian drones. They ran cocaine to Europe and used that money to fund the rebuilding of Lebanon in 2006. They had the Isle of Margarita, which was basically a Hezbollah headquarters there in Venezuela, because they don't want Hezbollah to be able to fund themselves and fund the rebuilding of Lebanon like they did after 2006. That's one of the primary reasons we went after Venezuela. Why a lot of the stuff going on in the Middle East right now, why a lot of the discussions are going the way they are, has to do with the attempt to get Hezbollah to disarm. This is another thing that it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And we showed the video before, Hassan Nasrallah, before he died, saying just flat out, if you're not armed, you're going to die. And that's it. And so it's just the directive from the leader of Hezbollah before his death was never give up your arms. Never. So I don't think that's going to happen. And the Lebanese people have lived through multiple civil wars that were long-lasting and utterly devastating, and they really aren't going to do that ever again. And there's been attempts to cause civil wars in Lebanon over and over again. There was the event where their foreign minister was kidnapped by Saudi Arabia, and they tried to get him to lead a Sunni revolution in Lebanon. And the Sunnis and the Shiites in Lebanon said, no, we're not doing this. They actually went against their religious superiors in the, you know, Wahhabist Sunni command structure and refused to go to war because they'd seen how damaging it had been before. So I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Diplomats sought guarantees from Hezbollah that it will hold fire if Iran is attacked, source says. Oh, I bet they did. If we attack Iran, you're not going to attack us, are you? I mean, that would be unfair. You wouldn't do anything so backhanded as that, would you? Just let us attack Iran and don't worry about it. Don't attack us while we're attacking Iran. Okay, I'm sure. Donald Trump's envoy said Wednesday that a plan to end the Gaza war is now moving to phase two with the goal of totally disarming Hamas despite a number of Israeli strikes during the ceasefire. A number of them. So they're trying to get Hamas to willingly disarm themselves. They're trying to get Hezbollah to willingly disarm themselves. Here's the problem, folks. Here's the glaring problem with this whole situation. It's that for the last 2 years, Israel has waged systematic, brutal war against the people of Gaza, utterly destroying them, their infrastructure, poisoning their wells, literally, setting up food distribution points and then shooting everybody who showed up. They have been flagrantly violating international law, committing war crime upon war crime, captured in full color HD and spread all over the internet, and nobody is doing anything to stop them. So then when you go to Hezbollah or you go to Hamas and say, hand over your guns, the international community guarantees your safety, do you think they're going to take that offer? You absolute morons, what do you think is going to be the consequence of 2 years of unrelenting warfare against a enslaved, imprisoned, open-air prison populace in Gaza, with the entire international community being utterly unwilling or incapable to do anything to moderate, let alone stop it? Do you think the people of Lebanon are going to hand over control of their country to you now? Do you think the people that you obviously want to kill are going to willfully disarm themselves under guarantees that you will protect them? No, this whole idiocy in Gaza over the last 2 years has made these types of agreements utterly impossible and has guaranteed greater war, greater conflict into the future. That may have been the point the whole time, but if you wanted Hezbollah to give up their arms, if you wanted them not to attack when you want to attack Iran, if you wanted Hamas to come to some sort of agreement so you can peaceably live next to each other, then you shouldn't have spent 2 years bombing hospitals and elementary schools and refugee camps and food caravans and journalists. So, if I was Hezbollah, I wouldn't give up my guns. Are you kidding me? I would have used them a lot more and a lot earlier, actually. I think that was a mistake. I think Hezbollah made a mistake not getting involved in the conflict immediately following October 7th. I think they could have really made a difference then. And we predicted that they would. You remember that on October 9th, I was hosting the Alex Jones Show, and I said, I think if they cross that red line and enter into Gaza, I think Hezbollah is going to come down from the north, and it's not going to be good for Israel. I was wrong about that prediction, but was it the wrong strategy? I don't know. I think maybe if I had been right, and if Hezbollah did enter in a real way, we'd be in a very different world today. But instead, they did the Pager attack. They killed Nasrallah. They killed a bunch of the leadership. Hezbollah is still very strong, very active, very well armed, have a huge cache of missiles, huge cache of operatives operating in Lebanon still. So they're not weakened by any means. And the diplomatic attempts to disarm them aren't going to work. But if Israel wanted them to, you know, willingly hand over control to the Lebanese government, then they wouldn't have spent the last two years. Actively disproving the claim that the international community will be able to stop Israel if and when they try to take over Lebanon in a real way. Because, you know, they want Lebanon just like they want Gaza. They see it as the same, just two pieces of land that were promised them 3,000 years ago and that a bunch of animals live on right now.
Can feel the power of Methylene Blue. Don't let the evil power win. Order now on the alexjonesstore.com.
The truth is out there, and they don't want you to know it. There's still people that don't want to believe me out there. How are you going to tell me that Frog isn't totally gay?
Well, damn, I guess Alex was right. That frog was super gay.
A creeping mass with an eerie tone smiles on the surface with intentions unknown. Step past the light where truth's overthrown. Welcome, my friend, to the Info Zone.
An oozing mass of liars and snakes bought and paid for. Truth bends and breaks. It inches in close, steals freedoms away, drowns you in chemicals to make you obey.
I woke up this morning, felt the fire turn. Mind clear, feel the power burn. Found the truth in a place that delivers the force. Real strength, real fuel from the source. Methylene Blue, light my mind. Ultimate power, feeling strong and prime. Seymour's gummies, open the door.
Alex Jones Store.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.